It's good to see everyone this evening. We are continuing our discussion of frequently asked question number 16. What is our benevolent role? Number 16. And in our study last week, we basically covered the material that is found in the article itself. So we'll be getting into the questions in a moment in the lesson this week. I just want to emphasize a few things that we pointed out last time. Primarily that the concept of benevolent work, that is helping in the physical needs that others have, helping to fulfill whatever need they might have, is something that is encouraged by God. It is something that is in fact a responsibility that we have as Christians. We can see that both in the teaching that Jesus gave concerning love, as exemplified by the Samaritan who took care of the man who had been ambushed by thieves, by any number of examples that we can find, laws as well as actions of Israel, both positive in that they were encouraged to be hospitable and benevolent toward those who are needy, as well as the strong condemnations that, were elicited from God by those who were not caring for their fellow man. And then in the New Testament as well, as we look at passages such as those found in Galatians 6, James chapter 1, verse 27, the practice of pure and undefiled religion before God the Father, is to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction and keep oneself unspotted from the world. And then, of course, in the number of examples we have, both in Acts chapter 6, as well as the instructions in 1 Timothy 5 of caring for widows, as well as the call to care for those who are indigent saints, those who have some emergency need that they need to have filled, as we find in a number of examples, specifically with regard to the famines in Judea. So there are any number of passages that we could turn to emphasize the need for us to be benevolent. And what we sought to do in our study last week is establish, number one, how serious and important a concern that is. But at the same time, having done so, to establish its proper place with regard to the work of the church, that is, the purpose of the church as a collective, whether it be, and primarily, of course, as we understand the construct of the church to be within the congregation. What do we as a congregation have a responsibility to do in the realm of benevolence? And we emphasize, if you'll remember, that, that God has given a primary work that is spiritual in nature to the church. As the pillar and ground of truth, it is the responsibility of the church to evangelize the lost, as well as to build up spiritually those of its own number, the members of the church. And so we use the term evangelism and the term edification to describe those primary works of the church. And I think that we could rightfully say that those are the primary work and make a distinction between those spiritual works and what we might refer to as I wouldn't say that it's a spiritual work. I mean a physical work, benevolence. It is a spiritual work as well, but works that take care of spiritual needs in contrast to a work that would be taking care of a physical need. We can see the greater emphasis and the greater importance that is placed upon those works which deal with the spiritual needs, the soul of man, rather than his physical necessities, and that that God has given the church over for those purposes. And so, as we talk about a limited role concerning benevolence, as it is described in Scripture, it's something that as you read Scripture concerning the collective work of a local congregation, you will find that it is indeed limited. We'll look at, especially in the last question that we have on this page, if you have time to get to question number 8 in the lesson today, all of the descriptions concerning where the monies were sent from the local treasury to help physically, benevolently, that it always has to do with the helping of saints, those who are Christians. So we seek to make a distinction between what is the responsibility of a local church and what is the responsibility of an individual Christian in the practice of pure and undefiled religion. The reason we seek to make this distinction is because the muddying of the waters in that regard has led to division among God's people. So it's important that we understand what God's pattern on this particular subject is, so that we can explain why it is that we do what it is that we do, and why it is wrong to do it, or to depart from that pattern, to do it in a way that God did not authorize. And that's going to be a part of our continuing study to look at questions. Not a great part, but a part of it. So that's kind of what we talked about in the lesson last week. And what we want to do is emphasize this one point. When we seek to distinguish, when we seek to talk about the way in which things need to be done, and in so doing, from time to time say, no, you shouldn't do it that way. You should do it another way. We do not want in any way to leave the impression that we think it is, one, not an important work, or work that we don't have to do or shouldn't be doing. It is extremely important. What we seek to emphasize, however, is the way God intends for those things to be fulfilled. And so when we talk about that, kind of keep that in mind, because we don't want to be accused of saying that benevolence is not an important thing, or that we have something against it in any way, because that's simply not the case. All right, so any comments or questions before we get into the actual questions? We'll put them up on the board, the questions that are contained in this material. All right, if not, then let's go to question number one concerning our benevolence. Well, I would like some individuals to read the passages that are contained up on the board. So would someone agree to please read Leviticus 25:35? Okay, Josh, please. Deuteronomy 14:28-29. Everyone raise their hand at once. Would someone please do? Dennis, thank you. And Jonathan, if you will, Deuteronomy 15, verses 7 through 11. The first passage, Leviticus chapter 25 and verse 35. Question, by the way, how did Jehovah attempt to instill a concern for the needy in people through the Old Testament?
If your brother becomes poor and cannot maintain himself with you, you shall support him as though he were a stranger and a sojourner, and he shall live with you.
Okay. And then Deuteronomy 14, please.
At the end of every third year, you shall bring out the tithe of your produce of that year and store it up within your gates. And the Levite, because he has no portion nor inheritance with you, and the stranger and the fatherless and the widow who are within your gates, may come and eat and be satisfied, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hand which you do.
Okay, and then Deuteronomy 15, 7 through 11.
If there is a poor man with you, one of your brothers, in any of your towns and your land which the Lord your God has given you, you shall not harden your heart or close your hand from your poor brother, but you shall freely open your hand to him and shall generously lend him sufficient for his need of whatever he lacks. Beware that there is no base thought in your heart, saying, the seventh year, the year of remission, is near, and your eye is hostile toward your poor brother, and you give him nothing. Then he may cry to the Lord against you, and it will be a sin in you. You shall generously give to him, and your heart shall not be grieved when you give to him, because for this thing the Lord your God will bless you in all your work and in all your undertakings. For the poor will never cease to be in the land. Therefore I command you, saying, you shall freely open your hand to your brother, to your needy and poor in your land.
Okay. All right, so let's look at these passages and what's indicated from all. Obviously, all the passages are dealing with benevolence in this case, helping those who are poor. So looking at those passages, what are some of the individuals that are mentioned by name, specifically mentioned as individuals who should be helped by the decree?
I think one of the key ones is the thy brother.
Okay.
Because if you say poor and you live out here in our community, there's, you go on and on and on.
Okay. I do want to emphasize here that the command would be to individuals in that case. And we're going to point out exactly what you're talking about with the poor as being a general process.
Sure. Countries out, I mean, go on and on and on. It's never ending cycle.
That's right. That's right. In fact, that's what's indicated in verse 11 of that last text. The poor will be with you always, the poor on the earth. In fact, Jesus had a reference to that as well that we'll talk about as we continue on. What else? What other individuals or groups are mentioned here?
Fatherless and widows.
Fatherless and widows. Okay. It's interesting, the same phrase is used as that found in James chapter 1 as well.
Levites.
I'm sorry?
Levites.
The Levites. Okay, so we're talking about there what we might refer to as public servants. And we're going to talk a little bit about the Levite as a special case in that regard. I think it's appropriate to do so. Who else?
Poor man of your brother.
Okay, so in fact, in the first one, Leviticus chapter 25, he talks specifically as well as Deuteronomy 15, the poor man. But he said to treat him as what? The poor man. Okay, as you would treat strangers or sojourners. So that's a pretty wide gamut. I've got strangers, sojourners, Levites, fatherless widows, the poor man. It's quite a large spectrum of individuals that's under consideration here. In what way do you treat the poor man as a stranger or sojourner?
Hospitality.
Okay. Expression of hospitality. So that indicates that we have a responsibility to the stranger and sojourner then, or at least the Israelite did. They, by extension, these applications can be made to us as Christians as well. We'll talk about that as well. So you treat the poor man as you would an individual who is a stranger or a sojourner. An individual who is away from home, who is in need of hospitality because he doesn't have available the resources that he would have in his home. So you're talking about individuals who are lacking in resources. All right. Individuals like that, and that certainly... when you talk about a poor man, a stranger, a sojourner, a fatherless individual, and a widow, all these individuals are without resources. They are to be treated in a loving way by extending such needed resources to them. This is benevolence. This is the word benevolence. What about the Levite? How is the Levite, and why is the Levite put into this category? Yes, Robert.
The Levite didn't have land ownership. So they didn't have the ability to grow their own food. So they were supported by the rest of the population.
Okay. And that was a part of the decree as given by God from the very beginning. As Roger indicated, the Levite tribe of Levi did not receive a land inheritance as did the other tribes of Israel. The Levites were those who, again, we could relate them to public servants. They were individuals who worked in the service of the priesthood, and as such, they were given instead of an inheritance of land, the responsibility for their care was given to the rest of the nation. And what way was that accomplished, by the way? Primarily.
Through the tithing.
And all that sacrificial offering, the tithe that was given, given back to God was used with regard to the support of both the priests as well as the Levites. Okay, so we have this this indication even under the old covenant of a work of benevolence that was important, and I want to just add to that final section that was found in Deuteronomy chapter 15. In verses 7 through 11, concerning the seventh year and why there might be some resentment on the part of an individual. Here is an individual who is poor and in need, and you're considering giving to fulfill that need and doing so prior to the seventh year. Why would that cause some resentment on the part of the one who would be giving to help in that occasion or to supply something that was lacking?
Well, because the person receiving would be in debt to the person giving, and in the seventh year, the year of release, all debts are made null.
Or wiped away in that situation. Okay. So I want you to think about that for just a moment, because it kind of gets to a very important point that we're going to make as our lesson continues. In fact, I think the second... question, if I'm not mistaken, third question concerning bad motivations is something we're going to be talking about this to a certain extent. He's already answered it, so we'll just kind of talk about it. Resentment can come up for an individual, let's say, lending money the year before the Jubilee and the realization that debt that the person would owe him would be forgiven at that time. And in fact, there wouldn't be any return for the money that was lent. And that obviously, for an individual who was not sufficiently spiritually minded, could cause one to be resentful if he fulfilled the command to give or to be benevolent, or if not resentful, hesitant to do it. And why would that be wrong? In other words, it would be good business, wouldn't it? Not to lend to someone right before that year of release when all debts are forgiven. Good business not to do that, because if you do that, you lose the money that you lend. But what's wrong with that then, since it's good business?
Because benevolence isn't business.
Okay.
That's not the point of benevolence. The point is to help and pull someone out of a dangerous or difficult area. And by doing that, making our hearts more compassionate, more seeing of people in trouble. So it's not business.
Okay, good. I like that. Benevolence is not business. That's a good point. And yeah, we're talking about the motivation behind benevolence, and that's what I want to talk about, or at least emphasize. The motivation behind benevolence, Gene indicated compassion. I think that it's bound up in the term charity, as it's rendered in the King James Version of 1 Corinthians 13. And of course, we use the term love to cover that, seeking another's welfare. And that is a primary, or it should be, a primary motivation and impetus for us as Christians with regard to our dealing with others. We always ought to be concerned for the welfare of others, seeking their welfare, seeking their highest good. And there are times when individuals who are in need, where if you have that ability to sacrifice so that they might have a filled need taken care of by you, that is something that such a motivation, such a pure motivation, you would be able to fulfill that. And anything that would come between you and that motivation, that feeling or that desire, is something to be avoided. And that, of course, is the strict admonition that is given there in Deuteronomy chapter 15 with regard to any resentment or hesitation that might be present. The year of Jubilee was something that was a positive thing. It was a blessed thing. It was something that God gave to His people as a sign of mercy and compassion. And it should not cause problems. And of course, if an individual again became hesitant or resentful, then there's a problem that shouldn't be there. The problem is heart. And should be avoided. Yes, Dennis?
Verse Luke 6, 34, 35. And if you lend to those from whom you hope to receive back, this is the Lord speaking. And if you lend to those from whom you hope to receive back, what credit is that to you? For even sinners lend to sinners to receive as much back. But let your enemies do good and lend, hoping for nothing in return, and your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the highest, for He is kind to the unthankful and evil.
And by the way, the very next verse ties in very well with that too, as far as the call to be merciful just as your Father is merciful. It is an indication of mercy on your part. So when you see these terms, you see charity, you hear mercy, you hear compassion, you hear the term love. All of these are, again, the impetus of such benevolent action. It's what we need to be thinking about as we consider this opportunity whenever it presents itself. That should be our desire and willingness as a result of number one, as you see that text, be merciful as your Father is merciful. The Lord is reminding us that we have obtained mercy from God, doing to others as a result of, well, I mean, to give a spiritual equivalent to that, as we find in the Lord's Prayer, as He prayed, forgive others as God has forgiven you. If we pray for God to forgive us of our sins, but we're unwilling to forgive the transgressions of others against us, He's not going to be willing to do that. We desire it as a result of our desire that God show and express compassion and mercy toward us. We should express compassion and mercy toward others as well. It's kind of a something that follows as a result of what God has given to us. Roger?
I was thinking about another scripture. I don't know where it is, but it's about the Hebrews were given instructions not to harvest every last bit of wheat or the grapes, but to leave some in the corners for the poor to come and pick after the harvest was done.
Yeah, man, there were many provisions that were given to care for the poor. Yeah, I mean, you think about it, we are living in a rather exceptional time in that there are so many provisions that are available to those who are poor, those who are lacking. Provisions that in part, those who pay taxes pay for them. I mean, I understand that as a part of our lot as citizens of the United States, but we have resources as a nation, and it really is our nation as a result of our government and the way our standard of living, those kinds of things, to where the poor can be taken care of to a very great extent by the government. That failsafe was not there in the past, and is not there in many nations. One thing that I would encourage you is to not become there's a term that is not coming to me. Cynical, I guess, would be the term. With regard to requests that are made or situations where you find someone who is in need, to where you personally do not respond when you can. And say either it's their own fault, perhaps, or the government will take care of it or someone else will. Because if you do that, when you reach that point, then you're like the priest and the Levite that we mentioned as we were looking last week at the example of the Good Samaritan in Luke chapter 10, who both, when they saw this individual who had been fallen upon or ambushed by thieves, walked by on the other side, couldn't be bothered with it. We need to make sure that we don't reach that point. Justin?
Why lend and not give? Sit here and we've got this poor person that showed up and we're not giving them anything, we're lending them. Mm-hmm. Right after this, you have a slave that sold the person. So that's really important, right? We got nothing.
Right.
And it says, give them stuff. Don't lend them stuff. Give them stuff. Mm-hmm. This poor person that showed up, lend it to them.
Okay.
Why?
Good question. I've got an idea. Is what I think what... Yes?
Chance the poor person pays you back at nil. He may be able to turn his life around and pay it back. But God has come upon us to depend on the person to be able to pay that back.
Okay.
Or to help lift himself up.
Okay, there's that. Yes?
Well, to lend also offers them a chance to maintain their self-confidence, their self-image, their pride to some extent. To think that at some point they're going to return that. And if they can, they can't. But it doesn't treat them as less than.
So lending can allow them to maintain some dignity and standing. By the way, in addition to that, some individuals who are in need would be more likely to receive and be willing to receive help if it were based upon the principle of lending rather than giving. We'll need your charity. You know, we all have sometimes an inappropriate pride in that sense, but somewhat understandable as well because it allows it to be. I'm thinking that there may be possibility whenever such things come up, especially with regard to lending, is a request is made. And that may be that the request is made. Could you lend me some money? So in part, it might be something that would be at least the impetus of it would be a request that is made.
It could be an offer.
I'm sorry?
It could be an offer too.
Yeah, an offer as well. Yeah, but that's a question that Justin was asking. Why does the offer come in the form of a loan rather than a gift?
Because if I see somebody said, you need this, you can lend this to you. Yeah, but I would expect it. Sure. I expect it back to work.
Hey, you've heard a few things, Justin. What, you want to add anything to that?
I'm not going to add anything to the answers. I'm not going to add some other questions.
Okay.
But it's interesting because when you get over to Jesus and he's saying, all right, if somebody asks you for this, then give them that and give them this other thing too. Like your coat, clothing, or whatever. and Corinth didn't loan Judea money. And I don't know, it's a peculiar thing. It seems like we don't really have this concept of loaning that much in the New Testament.
Now, the text that was mentioned by Dennis just a few moments ago, where was that located? It's Luke 5, wasn't it?
Luke
6. And you look at that passage, it says in verse 34, if you lend to those from whom you hope to receive back what credit. So, so there is the call there to lend without expecting to receive. There in verse 35. Love your enemies, do good, lend, hoping for nothing in return.
Your reward will be great. That's not a call to lend.
That's what?
That's not a call to lend, though. That's saying, if you're going to lend, do it this way.
Okay.
But it's not a call to lend.
I understand, yeah. Right. It's the attitude to have when you lend. In other words. Yes, Steve?
Matter of lending, you're careful that, well, you owe this, you know, you keep bugging, you owe, you know, nothing. When are you going to pay me back? You know, you got to have the right attitude about it. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I understand. I'll smile at you now, Dick. I don't want you to think I'm frowning at your answer.
But anyway, that you, you know, you want to put them in your debt, so to speak, you know, the guy that's one that's forgiven a large amount, and he had something owed him a small amount, you know, grab him by the throat, what are you going to pay me, you know?
Right.
You got to have the right attitude when we lend about not even expecting to have it returned.
Okay. And of course, we are here talking about the attitude of the individual who has the opportunity to help. And that's what we're emphasizing here in this particular lesson. Yes, Dennis?
Deuteronomy 15 is the law of debts. That's what the subject matter is. If you're going to lend, this is how you handle that. And if you lend it to a poor person, a 7th year, you will at least succeed because it's the Lord's will that you do that. Okay. These are commercial transactions that are going on here. Jesus, in his Sermon on the Mount, he said, you have heard that it was said, but I say it to you. And that's what he was doing. He's taking that principle and saying, well, we don't do that now. But what they were doing back then, you see, you lend to a brother who's got a bad year's crops to come in. 2 years later, they all come in, and he's got a lot of money now. But that wasn't a loan. You gave him the money. He had an obligation to you. But under the law, he was a loan. Now that he's profited, he owes you because you helped him, he should pay you back. That's the purpose of the law. So that can help him. If he's a poor man loan and he can't afford, and he never can afford to pay you back, in the 7th year he released the flip. But Jesus said he takes it beyond that, just like he did the other thing he talked about in several times.
Yeah, and then that's exactly true. I mean, we're talking about a change in covenant to pay. What is required of the Christian with regard to such attitudes and approaches to things supersedes and is beyond what was requested under the law. You say that with regard to forgiveness, for example. I understand it's rabbinical teaching, but there was that allusion to it made by Peter, I believe, when he talked about how often should I forgive if someone comes to me requesting forgiveness 7 times. And the rabbinical teaching at that time was that 3 times was sufficient. In other words, you forgive him 3 times, the 4th time you're not required to forgive him anymore. And Jesus said 70 times 7. Same thing with regard to murder. Don't murder, he says. Not only don't murder, but that hatred is sinful. Adultery, not only adultery, but lust. And so all of these kinds of things, there is a higher a standard to which God calls us under that new covenant.
I believe Roger.
Roger.
In Luke 6 and verse 30, it says, give to every man that asketh of thee, and of him that taketh away that goods, ask him not again. There are some unstated implications there, aren't there? That is a poor man, that's someone in distress. Is Jesus saying that anybody that anybody want something, you just give it to them?
Well, I mean, at least in part of it, beginning in that 27th verse, has reference to those who are using you spitefully. And something that has come to mind with regard to the the expressions that Jesus gave in the Sermon on the Mount would be, for example, a Roman soldier who had the right to require certain things of the citizens or non-citizens of in the realm where they worked, to where they could take clothing, they could compel an individual to carry their armor for a period of, for a distance. And Jesus is talking, at least in part of this, about those kinds of situations. And it's a call to pacifism to a certain extent. And I think that we have to be somewhat careful with context in this regard. But he's, as a disciple of Christ, bottom line is we should always be willing to give and to go beyond and not to be resentful. And that is even if
chaos, though, to me,
and that's even if a situation arises to where this is something that's under duress, and which is, again, could be the case in this particular instance.
Okay, you come to me and say, I need your car. Okay, I'll give you my car. And then I don't have a car. So I go to Josh and say, give me your car. So I think there must be some sort of a overriding, things that are implied here that aren't stated. Otherwise, it's just, total, like I said, it seemed like total chaos to me.
But yeah, well,
you just ask for things that you have a notion that you'd like for the other guy has.
Well, anybody have any thoughts about that?
Just another story. I mean, I feel like we're talking about the poor here. I know I've been through verse 20, but poor. But I don't know they're necessarily talking about people.
There are principles that are stated elsewhere with regard to the responsibility of individuals who are making such requests. If a man, and we're actually going to talk about this a little bit later, if a man is not willing to work, neither should he eat. A man who's not willing to care for his own, those of his own household, is worse than an infidel. And so there is some discernment with regard to these things. But I think that the emphasis here in this particular text is whether it be by compulsion or whether it be requests that are made of us as Christians, that the call for us is to be generous rather than miserly, to be ready rather than hesitant, to be gracious rather than resentful with regard to those requests that are made of us, because that is what is characteristic of a Christian. And that's what he's calling us to.
I sure agree with all of that. Just when you take this verse without any context, it seems kind of radical.
Well, yeah, I understand what you're saying. Yeah. I think you would need to be talking to the individual who is just wanting stuff and greedy for stuff that doesn't belong to him. You need to deal with him as well, I suppose, in that regard.
It's tied down by verse 36. Be merciful. If you just come up and ask me for my car, it's not necessarily merciful for me to give it to you. And that's where the discernment comes in.
And discernment is needed. Yes, sir.
The discussion, while I very much agree with Gene's answer, is a very plausible discussion as a whole, I think it at this point has become a little unprofitable, because the question here on the board is, how did Jehovah attempt to instill a concern for the needy in the Old Testament? We're discussing things in the New Testament. We're just establishing that God has always cared for the needy, even back in the Old Testament. It's like us discussing marriage, divorce, and remarriage. We understand from the New Testament what the scriptural bounds, what pleases God in marriage, divorce, remarriage. We don't necessarily have to go to the Old Testament to figure out that God hates divorce. But we certainly can go to the Old Testament and figure out God hates divorce. But the point here is, God's always cared for the needy.
Yeah, we've established that. Yeah, this class is not linear. I don't think it ever has been linear. We're guilty of meandering quite often, and we have here gone beyond. But if we're covering things that we'll be able to cover a little bit more quickly when we get to some of the other questions, because we're going over some of the same material we will.
Word discretion is to be used by the person who has what can be given, And I have found myself using that for the positive as well. A person was asking me, I need this and that. And I said, no, you do not need that. And then they came to me later on, a few days later, and said, thank you for instilling discipline in my decision.
Good. Very good. Yeah. Yeah, discernment is needed. Discretion is needed with regard to even those things that we offer. Because as we've indicated, the motivation that we have when we express these acts of benevolence is the welfare of another. If a wino comes up to me and that wino says, you have $20 you can give me. And I say, oh sure, you know, here's 20, give them $20. Well, they're not going to take that to find a place to stay for a night or to find something to eat. They're going to take it to get more wine to fuel their addiction. So you're not benefiting them in that regard. So discernment or discretion, if an individual comes up to you in a situation like that, would be to buy them a meal. Or to find them shelter rather than to give them cash. So that's an example of exercising discretion or being discerning in that regard. And you know, we're wanting to seek people's welfare. And again, if you enable an individual who's unwilling to work, if you enable an individual who is unwilling to support his family, if you're aiding an individual who is not poor, but rather who is unwilling, who is lazy, indolent, then in those kinds of situations, you're not benefiting them. And so that type of discretion is something that is needed. And again, some of the other questions that we have here are going to deal with that in more detail. Yes, Chris? That's stealing, which I mean, it's what it is. He stole from you. And what is our response when someone steals from us? And that's that can be a somewhat difficult question. Right. But he stole instead of. And again, depending upon the situation or circumstance, I think discernment is and discretion would be needed in figuring out how to deal with that. And the person would have some discretion with regard to how he would handle it in the situation. I think that some of that's indicated there in Luke chapter 6, as well as Matthew 5 and the other statement of the Sermon on the Mount. But again, we'll try to get in and talk about these things a little bit more as we get into some of the specifics that are found in the text. We've got just a couple more minutes left. So what I would like to do is read the two passages from that are found in the second question. Before the church was established, Jesus taught his disciples about the benevolent responsibility in almsgiving. What is it that is urged in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 5:42? Would someone read that passage, please? 542.
Give to the one who begs from you, and do not refuse the one who would borrow from you.
Okay, so the render assistance then. And then in chapter 13 of Hebrews, verse 16, Justin.
And do not neglect doing good and sharing, for with such sacrifices God is pleased.
Okay, so what he's pairing together here, and this is again something that's helpful, is that these are responsibilities that we have, instructions that are being given as to how we're to conduct ourselves when these requests are made and these needs are shown. But to remember that when these things happen, that God is pleased when we do these things. So there's motivation for us as well. It's not merely duty, but it should be something that we would be willing to do in the realization of what we will receive in return. So we're giving up the physical so that we may reap the spiritual. Giving up the temporal so that we can reap the eternal. What is a man profited if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? What shall a man give in exchange for the soul? It's a simple, easy transaction here if you consider it in that way. Yes, I am sacrificing physically by helping another, but I am reaping greater rewards than the sacrifice that I'm making. So I wanted to emphasize that so that we could get to the third question, because the third question is a very simple one, and then we'll pick up with question four next week. So the bad motivations, we've already made reference to a couple. So someone, there are no wrong answers here, just want some motivations that you may have noticed or yourself experienced, maybe some emotions concerning people who are seeking help. What would they be? I'll start with one, greed. It's mine, I want to keep what's mine. So greed might be one. What else? I'm sorry? Okay, a hard heart toward an individual, lack of caring. So a lack of love would be.
I think some people find the church to need to touch. I know that we had a church across the street. They go there first.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, which is it from the other side, the motivations of individuals who are seeking help. Often it's not because they need it, but their greed, and that they realize that that individuals who call themselves Christians are often easy to fleece. And we've got to be careful and discerning in that regard. Yes, Roger?
Yeah, well, this is covered by some other things, but just apathy. You know, just your idea, like, here comes another one.
Okay.
And just lumping everybody in the same category. Masses with their hand out, rather than think about them as an individual with particular needs.
Good. Apathy is a very good example. I've got it. There's another one that he put here that may be similar to the greed, or at least the way I put it, the stinginess. I think stinginess is very much motivated by greed, but a miserly individual.
So wouldn't that be in the selfishness, stingy?
Selfishness. Good. Good. Yeah.
Why don't you get a job?
There you go. Resentment there. Yes, go.
Discomfort. Just walking along with and panhandlers and not knowing how to react.
Okay.
And
fear. Fear could be. Yeah. I mean, she mentioned discomfort.
Single
female
walking down the street in San Francisco or some large city, and there's, you know, homeless in a sleeping bag on the side of the street, and you don't know.
Right.
What this person is like at all.
Now, I do want to make a distinction, because that's very legitimate, but I do want to make a distinction between what we're talking about here is an unwillingness to do what God requires of us and a situation where there may be a legitimate fear. In other words, we need to be careful that we don't put ourselves in a situation to where we may be harmed because we're trying to do that good deed. If that is the case, then there may be other things that can be done, having someone accompany you or help you, assist you in taking care of the situation, whereas you may not be comfortable to do it yourself. The other one that I have here is worry. Worry if I give someone something of mine that I may not have enough to make it to the end of the week or the end of the month. And that kind of worry is something. In Matthew 6:33 tells us to be anxious for nothing. And it's amazing how often God blesses us when we are benevolent toward others. Yes, Jesse?
We should be prudent, but sometimes it may be the best thing to put ourselves in a dangerous situation, because we're not always called to live a safe life. There are other things that bias us against people, or see people, and we just have a
prejudices of
gut response to them, or disgust about them, or something like that. Or we see someone and think, well, you're not that bad off. I mean, if we're talking about benevolence within the assembly, sometimes people want someone to be out and out destitute before they help them. Well, that isn't necessarily necessary. But I get concerned that people in the church aren't willing to ask. I'm not that kind of person. I've come up and asked some people if I could borrow several $1,000 for some short period of time, and they said no, and I was fine with that, and everything was cool. But some people would feel bad asking questions like that, but I feel bad thinking about this. Yes, I'm going to name a name. So, Phil Simpson needed a truck. I had no clue. Now, you might say, all right, Justin, you need to have more of a clue. But at the same time, we really have quite a bit of money in this congregation.
it would have been nothing for us to pull up some money and get him a truck. And somebody finally did. I think an individual finally did. But that's something that could have been taken care of a long time ago if the need had been more known or if people had been comfortable to ask.
Right, right. Yeah. And keep in mind again, this is a proactive thing. Expressing benevolence, which would indicate an important part of that is being aware, trying to be aware. And secondly, the motivation of love. Let's keep that in mind. We'll leave it with that, and we'll pick up question number 4 next time. Thank you very much for your kind comments and questions today.